Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Sam Sanders is coming to Iowa next week for a show on Thursday, May 9th at Cheslow Auditorium on the Drake campus in Des Moines. If you haven't heard, Sam is one of the public radio's freshest voices. He's gone from covering politics as an NPR reporter to hosting his own radio show and podcast called It's Been a Minute that airs here on Iowa Public Radio Sundays at 9 a.m. Each week on the program, he discusses the week's news and culture, has a deep dive conversation with a special guest, and he is bringing the show to Des Moines on May 9th. He'll be bringing It's Been a Minute event to Des Moines, also with NPR's Sarah McCammon, IPR's and NPR's Clay Masters. I think Charity Nebbe will also be part of that show on stage at Drake University's Cheslow Auditorium, catching up on the news and culture of the week. There are tickets still available. Find out more at iowapublicradio.org. And for this half hour, Sam Sanders joins us live from NPR West in Culver City. Sam, welcome to the program.
Hey there, how are you?
I'm wonderful, now that you're on the show.
Hey. I have not been asked questions of myself for half an hour in a very long time.
Really? Okay, we'll see how you do.
Okay.
Tell us, what do you have planned so far for Thursday's show in Des Moines?
I think first I got to start off by saying I'm just so excited to get back to Iowa. Mm. I spent a lot of time in Iowa when I was covering the 2016 race, and I love that state. I have driven it east to west, top to bottom, and everywhere I went, people were just great and awesome, and I love Des Moines. I love the food scene out there. I love the people out there. So, one, I just want to get back there and hang for a bit, which I'm excited to do. And two, we're just going to use the show, really, to have a chance to talk with two of my favorite political reporters who know Iowa so well, Sarah McCammon and Clay Masters. And they both covered 2016 as well. So we're going to kind of compare notes based on what we saw then and what we can expect for 2020 now and big questions we have, you know. And
right.
There's so much to talk about already. It seems as if this race has been going on for about a year right now. There's, what, 21 candidates now for Democrats?
Well, we just heard at the top of the hour news we have Michael Bennett in the ring. Does that
whoever
bring
our
candidate? Candidate number up to 49? No.
Feels like it.
There you go. Like it. Feels like it. And you're all about how the news feels as well as what it actually is in your show. And I think that's what people really love about it. I think you'll be taping your show, this week's podcast, tomorrow. Is that right?
Yeah. So we tape early mornings on Fridays here from NPR West to get that Friday podcast episode out by the afternoon and then to make that radio hour that folks hear on stations across the country throughout the weekend.
Sam Sanders with us live for about the next 20 minutes. If you've like to join our conversation with a question for Sam, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. You have such wonderful little parts of your show every week. Each episode, you ask guests to describe how the news felt this week in only 3 words. Do you pick those beforehand? For instance, do you have the words, your words for this week yet?
So I don't have my words yet, but I'm thinking about my words, and I can give you guys a little kind of
yes.
tidbit maybe of what I'm thinking about.
Okay.
Actually, let me go back to my notes and refresh myself. Oh, God, why am I blanking? This is live radio, huh? I'll talk about my other guests. So we have Matt Pierce from the LA Times on the show this week. He'll be talking about gearing up to cover the 2020 race. We have a local reporter here from LA who will talk about measles and how that seems to be everywhere right about now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then I'm going to talk about this really interesting battle over potential homeless shelters in San Francisco. It's gotten really heated, really nasty, to the point that there are competing GoFundMe campaigns to fund lawsuits and countersuits against these shelters. It's kind of bonkers, but it's indicative of the extent to which homelessness across the country has just become this really, really big, invisible issue for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to get all the different kinds of topics in the show. Like
Sam, you mentioned that you were embedded with the Bernie Sanders campaign, reporting on that in 2016. In a recent episode of It's Been a Minute, you relayed a story about Iowa. And while you were talking about the history of white nationalism in the U.S., you told a pretty chilling story about talking with an Iowan, I believe a Trump supporter, looked you right in the face and said on mic that the U.S. was made by and for white Europeans. I wonder if, can you recall a little more about that experience?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. It wasn't that chilling in person. He was a really nice guy, and I'll tell you how I found him. I was in Iowa for several days before the caucuses in 2016, and I was just looking for good folks to talk to, and I was driving down some major street, and this guy whose backyard was facing the street, he had like an 8-foot by 8-foot blown-up photo of Donald Trump on top of his fence, and it was lit up, and I'd stop my car, U-turn right away, screech the tires, and said, I got to interview him. Mm. There's no way I leave this state without talking to this guy with the 8x8 Trump blow-up photo. So I just wait outside of his house for about an hour. Right. He comes home, and I'm like, hey, I'm with NPR. Can I talk to you? Nicest guy in the world. He actually didn't tell me who he was voting for, but he did say that he liked Trump, so I don't want to say that he was for sure a Trump voter, though there was a Trump photo in his backyard. So we just start talking, and I said, what do you like about Trump? What do you like about the other candidates? And he said, I really like Donald Trump's views on immigration. And we kept talking about it, and eventually over the course of this conversation, he leans into my mic and says, I get what he's saying because, you know, this country, America, is a country that was really built for and made for white Europeans. And so, I mean, my job when I'm on the mic is just to stay still and quiet and let them keep on talking. But that kind of took me back a loop. So I stood there quietly. I looked them in the face. And I gave this kind of like, do you see who you're talking to face to him? Because he's like talking to this black guy saying this, me.
Right, yes.
And he kind of course corrects and says, well, it's also meant for the descendants of slaves, too. And that's awesome. And it was, you know, it's like my job there was just to observe and to listen. But he kept talking. And it was just kind of this eye-opening moment about our politics and the way that we talk about our politics. I think so many of us aren't willing to wait long enough for people to tell us how they really feel and what they really mean. We're in this age of euphemism where we use these nice words to cover up what we really want to talk about. And I think we need to have a space and a way to really get down to how we feel and say it in a way that is safe for us. Mm. And hopefully my show helps us get there. Hopefully we can do more of this in advance of 2020, because the only way to have real growth and movement as a country is to actually say what we're going to say and not beat around the bush.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah.
Right. Now, Bernie Sanders running again here in 2020. We learned that just a few days ago. He made it official. But I wonder, when you, this Trump supporter you talked with, given what you experienced covering the 2016 campaign, Sam, we had all this talk about the crossover between Trump and Sanders supporters, both being described as populists of a sort. Given what you experienced, do you think there is that crossover appeal?
I think there's crossover appeal for a lot of candidates, but I think it's usually overstated. We've learned a lot over the last several years that Americans are actually pretty polarized right now, and even people who say they're independent, they actually know which way they lean. They just don't want to tell it to a pollster. But I did talk to a lot of folks, because I covered Trump as well. You know, there were Bernie supporters who liked Trump and vice versa. I think that was a thing that happened because people were still getting to know Trump. He was kind of new. Mm-hmm. And Bernie Sanders, for a lot of folks, was kind of new as well. But they've both been in the national spotlight for the last 4 years consistently. And we know more about them. And people feel as if, I think, that their views on them and their politics are pretty set. So I could see less overlap now. But it is a thing that exists. And, of course, there was also overlap between a lot of Midwestern voters who, you know, voted for Obama once or twice and then voted for Trump. This is the thing about a lot of voters that I think a lot of partisans don't realize. You know, there are many voters who just like the change person every cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And the change can be Republican, the change can be Democrat, but it's change. And so there'll be the same thing that happens this cycle, but I usually think that that number of voters who do that is kind of overstated.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us, Sam Sanders, my guest live this half hour, joining us from NPR West in Culver City, California, 1-866-780-9100. Speaking of this white nationalist episode that you had on It's Been a Minute recently with the Atlantic staff writer Adam Serwer.
Yeah.
He seemed pretty optimistic that in spite of the strong history of white nationalism in this country, we're better positioned today today to confront and refute the white nationalism. It feels, at least to a lot of people, that there's been a resurgence. It's been let loose, given the climate. That's not nearly, though, as bad as it's been in the past history. Do you share that optimism?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, it is better for me to be a young black man in America today than it was probably in any other decade. So, yeah, of course, there's been progress. But I think that, you know, the point of that episode and Adam's piece in The Atlantic was that we should not act like some of the threads of nationalism and white nationalism springing up right now are new. They've been around forever, you know. So the crux of his article was explaining that there was this big anti-immigration push in the 1920s, which led to laws and led to lots of things, but also America's version of white nationalism that was practiced back then, it influenced and inspired Nazi Germany to the extent that Adolf Hitler would name drop American white nationalists as examples of how to do it, you know?
Wow.
And I think the power of Adam's essay and hopefully the power of our episode about that, you know, article was to say we have to acknowledge that truth to move away from it. It is very easy, particularly in the midst of election cycles, to just give into the rosy, optimistic rhetoric about America and what it represents. And I believe that I can love my country and also admit to all of our history, too, at the same time. And I think it's better that way, and I think it's more truthful that way. So the goal of that episode was just to say, hey, this is real. It has a history. Mm-hmm. We must acknowledge it.
Sam, I wanted to ask you a few questions about your sort of interview technique, how you get people to open up. And you talk about a lot of really important but also sometimes very sensitive issues on your show. It's been a minute. Politics, race, sexuality, gender identity. Conversations that make people squirm or people perhaps would not like to engage in themselves. Why do you go to where others would be afraid to go in conversation? And how do you do it?
I'm just nosy. I'm just really nosy. And I'm also obsessed with this idea that, like, all this stuff is connected, you know? Like, I think a lot of newsrooms want to say, all right, politics is over here. Business is over here.
Yes.
Culture is over there,
right.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's all connected, you know, like all of these things inform the other. So when I interview people, whether it be a politician or an actor or director, musician or author, whoever, I want to know about how all the parts connect for them as well. So that's kind of the guiding principle and ethos of my interview style. Also, I just like to, what I've come to realize is that people give you more of them if you give them a bit of you as well. Mm-hmm. So my usual MO in interviews is to kind of share a bit of myself with folks too. So yeah, I will give little details of me. And then it turns out when I do that, the folks that I'm talking to will give me more details of them. Mm-hmm. It is, I don't know, something approaching like an intellectual first date. Like you don't just ask questions. You talk a bit about yourself, too, and share some of yourself. And it's as if you're both, you know, walking hand in hand on this, you know, little journey of exploration and discovery. Gosh, that sounded corny. Sorry about that.
Hey, Sam, do you prefer to see your guest? I know sometimes when you were out reporting, of course, you're seeing him, whether you're in Des Moines covering the 2016 election, but a lot of your work is done in the studio. Do you prefer to see your guest, or is it better that they're distant, or does it make a difference what type of interview it is?
I love to see the guests, but sometimes I think that can be a problem for my producers. So basically, when I'm interviewing someone, I'm a very active listener, and I'm constantly kind of giving verbal feedback. So if I'm talking to someone and I ask them a question and they're talking back to me, I'll be like, yeah. Sometimes to the extreme. It's just like part of my routine. And when I'm in the same room with the person, it's hard to cut those ums and ahs out in post-production. But if they're in a different room across the country somewhere, we can isolate those and have fewer of those in the final product. So my producers would probably like it better if there was a little bit less of me going, but I find that when you do that, when you listen actively and lean into those conversations, people want to talk to you more. And also, that's the way that we talk in the real world. People, right. You know, it's conversations aren't linear in real life, and I want our chats on the show to feel like that.
Okay. Sam Sanders with us for another few minutes. Let's go to Juliana. Juliana, one of our listeners calling from Des Moines. Ask you to make it quick. We're running out of time, Juliana, but sure glad that you're joining us.
Hi. Sam, I'm a huge fan of the show and of your work in general.
Thank you.
I guess my question would be, in the current environment in our country, who would be someone that you would like to interview that you have not have a chance to do so yet?
Oh, man. The list is so long. I am particularly interested in talking to the leadership of the Democratic Party, because one of the things that I covered pretty extensively in 2016 was how the DNC was really losing power over Democrats. They weren't in control anymore. And, you know, when I was at the convention in Philadelphia in 2016 and you had Bernie delegates literally storming out of the convention center in protest, you realize, like, no one's really in charge anymore. And so now you have this crowded field of Democrats, 21 at least, running for, you know, president. And the National Party has no idea who's going to win. And they really have no input on who's going to win either, because this race is entirely up to the grassroots base right now. So I would love to talk to the DNC about how they handle that new reality. Who else? In terms of entertainers, I am obsessed with Kate McKinnon. She is the actress who appears on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, and is it possible that somebody can be, one person can be so talented?
I don't know how. She's like an alien from outer space with like superhuman abilities, you know?
Right.
But, you know, she's portrayed Hillary Clinton iconically on that show for years now. And I want to just ask her to unpack that portrayal of Hillary, because on the one hand, it's hilarious, but on the other hand, her impersonation of Hillary kind of leans into all of the negative stereotypes that we have about ambitious women. So I would just want to ask her, like, does she think pound for pound overall, was this like good or bad for capital W women? I'm just intrigued by that.
Okay.
So her.
Juliana, thanks for that question for Sam Sanders. We have just a few minutes left. Sam, it's time in the program to play Who Said That?
Oh, my God.
We'll give you a Who Said That. How about that?
I'm down for that.
Okay, here we go. Okay. Who said this? I didn't know people lived like this. I didn't know people choose to live like this.
Oh. Is it someone rich running for president? It sounds like a very elitist, out-of-touch thing to say. Give me a hint.
I can't keep you dangling. It's a trick question. It's one of our student interns who grew up in the Bay Area. When I asked her about her first winter in Iowa.
I have driven through Iowa in a snowstorm or two in my day. And, yeah, you guys are hardy stock, because I could not do that winter after winter.
I didn't know
after
people.
Winter.
Yeah, and she said, I said, how's the winter going for you? And she said, I didn't know people lived like this. I didn't know people choose to live like this. And I said, you have been slammed in the nicest way possible as an Iowan.
Yeah. That's funny. Well, make sure that she's layered up for the winter. She seems to not know what she's
getting
herself into.
We had a pretty harsh winter here.
I'm sure you did.
I want to ask you, too, you're coming to Iowa. You know,
I am.
Rag Bri is a huge event.
Oh, yeah. I've been invited before. I'm not that strong.
Oh,
I don't know if I can make it.
I think I will be embedded with Team NPR, No Pie Refused, this year. I'm going to make a little podcast out of it.
Look at you.
With Scott Horsley, and Richard Harris is on it as well. And I'm just wondering what year you're going to be on, because I was disappointed not to see your name on the list.
So I'm a runner. I run a lot. But rule about running is I don't do hills. I refuse. So if I did this bike situation, you'd have to guarantee me that there are no hills in Iowa that I would have to bike over. I hate hills.
Iowa's, you know, fairly
flat. It's pretty
flat. It's pretty flat.
Yeah.
But, okay, we'll have to work on you.
Okay.
I think.
Training.
You also have a segment, What's the Best Thing That Happened to You This Week?
Yeah.
Has something really nice happened to you this week?
Oh, man. You know, this has just been a week full of a lot of work for the show and, like, a lot of just really fun conversations that I'm really excited to bring to listeners. Every week, without fail, I end up talking with folks out in the world, and I learn something new in a fun, heartfelt way. So, like, that's consistently the best part of my week. But I will say, right now, if I had to choose, probably this really awesome breakfast burrito I just had. It was loaded with everything, Swiss cheese, avocado, ham, bacon, potato, egg, etc. And the place that makes it, Jerry's Market here in Culver City, they have this perfect little sauce that I put on top of it. That was for sure the best part of my week thus far.
You were a Croc Fellow. For those that don't know that, this is a year-long program. This is the elite of public radio. A year-long program as a younger man, you were ushered into this program. It's a program designed to identify and develop the next generation of extraordinary public media journalists from the estate of the philanthropist Joan Kroc. What made you want to apply for that fellowship and move into public radio?
Yeah, I didn't discover NPR until I was out of high school. I wasn't a backseat baby.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in San Antonio, Texas. Yeah.
Way down there.
It's nice down there. And my mother, driving growing up, she would only play gospel music. And my dad would only play AM radio. But when I began driving for myself, I found NPR. I liked it. And by the time I was in grad school, I was just in love with radio, period. I liked NPR. I liked Top 40. I liked Morning Drive and like Morning Zoo stuff. And I said to myself, I think I want to work in radio because all the folks that do it sound like they're having so much fun. And I decided that I would work for NPR because they were the most respected and I believe in them the most. So I literally just began to email friends and colleagues and classmates and say, who knows somebody at NPR? And I got an internship through that at WBUR in Boston. And then I just said, I'm going to apply to all the things that I can. And I applied for the Kroc Fellowship and said, well, you know, wish me luck. And thankfully it worked out. But
We are all lucky that it worked out. Did you have when you were younger and you'd just been exposed to public radio, did you have a voice or a personality in mind that you would have loved to, your 15-year-old self would have loved to emulate?
You know, when I first began to listen to NPR, I was obsessed with Guy Raz, who was at that time hosting Weekend All Things Considered.
Yes.
And he just had this way of delivering the news to you in a way that wasn't depressing and in a way that felt really lively. And so I've tried to capture that spirit in my show. I also, you know, like the rest of us, just came into public radio loving This American Life. And the one that really hooked me was an episode about a gospel singer and minister named Carlton Pearson, who was a guy whose albums my mother would play for us growing up. And when I heard the episode about this guy who I had heard as a kid with the songs in the car, it just really said to me that, like, public radio is, you know, for everybody. And the songs that my mother grew up listening to in Birmingham, Alabama, that's public radio, too.
Okay. Sam Sanders, just time enough to thank you and remind our listeners that you can attend events. Sam will be bringing It's a Minute, the event, to Des Moines next week with NPR's Sarah McCammon and Clay Masters on stage at Drake University's Cheslow Auditorium. Find out more about this event. It's next Thursday, May 9th at 7 p.m., Cheslow Auditorium on the Drake University campus. That's right, Sam Sanders on stage. Find out more at iowapublicradio.org. Sam, what a pleasure to have you on the air today. Thank you.
Thank you. Can't wait to see y'all next week.
All right. Until then.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about how students across the nation and around the world are on strike to call attention to climate change. In fact, we'll talk with two 14-year-old climate change activists here in Iowa. That's when we return. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Back in just a moment.